Very well, Comrade Coots. You don't have to wave your little popgun about.
Don't you try any funny business.
I can assure you I contemplate no such thing. But since, as you so quaintly put it just now, you're on to my number, what do you propose to do about it?
You've got to get me into this joint.
I feared that was what you were about to suggest. In my particular position, I have naturally no choice but to endeavour to carry out your wishes. But how can I get you into what you breezily describe as this joint?
You can say I'm a friend of yours and ask them to invite me.
Not one of your brightest suggestions, Comrade Coots. Being myself merely a guest in this stately home of England, I can hardly go about inviting my chums here for indefinite visits. Now, I must find another way.
Hey, someone's coming.
So there is. What instruments Providence puts into our hands?
What?
No matter. Beach?
Sir?
Who is that guy? Don't try any funny business.
Never fear.
Yes, sir.
Sorry to trouble you, Beach.
Not at all, sir.
This is my man, my valet, you know?
Ah.
He's just arrived from town. I had to leave him behind to attend the bedside of a sick aunt. Your aunt was better when you came away, Coot?
Yes, sir.
Capital, capital. Then you'll look after Coot's, Beach?
Very good, sir. I will see to it straight away, sir.
I suppose you think that's pretty darn smart. And don't forget, I still got this.
Come in.
Sorry to intrude beyond the Green Bay's Beach. I just wanted to make sure that my man was settling in all right.
Oh, yes, sir, perfectly. I was not aware that you would be requiring his services until the dinner gong sounded, or I would have detained him. I was just...
Saluting the gracious evening mild?
Perhaps you'd care for a drop yourself, sir.
I would indeed. Thank you, Beach. There was another little matter I wanted to talk to you about.
Yes, sir.
I thought it might be as well to speak to you about it before approaching Lady Constance.
Of course, sir.
The fact is, I'm feeling cramped. Have you ever written poetry, Beach?
No, sir.
Ah. Then it may be a little difficult for you to understand my feelings. My trouble is this. Out in Canada, Beach, I grew accustomed to doing my work in the most solitary surroundings. I have got to get a place where I can be alone, Beach. A little cottage with honeysuckle over the door where I can turn the key and bid the world go by.
Oh, you desire a small cottage where you can write poetry, sir.
You follow me like a leopard. Do you know of such a one?
There is an unoccupied gamekeeper's cottage in the West Wood, sir. But it is an extremely humble place.
Be it never so humble, it will do for me. Do you think Lady Constance would be offended if I were to ask for the loan of it for a few days?
I fancy that her ladyship would receive the request with equanimity, sir.
I am much obliged to you for your sympathy and advice in this matter, Beach. I knew you would not fail me.
Not at all, sir.
Admirable. Admirable. Beach, just one other thing. You might ask young Coots if he brought my revolver from town with him.
Yes, sir.
I think I saw it sticking out of his pocket. You might bring it to me, will you?
Very good, sir.
Top hole.
One of the little problems about keeping a complicated story like this going when you haven't got the plot thoroughly fixed in advance is that you do sometimes tend to lose sight of characters. Take Eve Halliday, for instance. She came down to Blandings determined to do something to help Phyllis, but thanks to Smith dominating the proceedings, so far she has done nothing about it.
Eve!
Well, Freddy?
I say, going anywhere?
Yes, I'm going down to Market Blandings to meet a friend. I must rush. Goodbye.
But I'll come with you.
No, I want to be alone.
But come with you as far as the gate. I say, I do think you might marry a chap.
I suppose I shall someday, if I meet the right one.
No, I mean me.
Oh, Freddy.
I love you, dash
it. Well, stop loving me. I'm an awful girl, really. I'd make you miserable.
Oh, happiest man in the world.
It's absurd, Freddy. Really, it is. Apart from the fact that I don't want to marry you, how can you marry anyone? Anyone, I mean, who hasn't plenty of money.
I wouldn't dream of marrying you for money.
What I meant was that you can't possibly marry a girl without money unless you've some money of your own.
I say, dash it, I... I say, is that really all that stands between us? Because
no, it
look,
isn't.
No, because look here. I'm going to have a good deal of money at any moment. Well, it's more or less of a secret, you know. In fact, a pretty deadish secret, so keep it dark. But Uncle Joe is going to give me a couple of thousand quid.
Uncle Joe?
You know, old Keeble.
Mr. Keeble is going to give you £2,000? What for?
I don't know. He's just given it to me, don't you know?
Did you simply go to him and ask him for it?
Ooh, that's about the strength of it, yes. Well then, will you?
What?
Marry me.
Freddy, go away.
Eh?
I really don't want to talk any more. Will you be a dear and just go? I've got a lot of thinking to do.
Oh, thinking. Right-ho.
Thank you so much.
Not at all. Toodaloo.
All of which has filled Eve with the right combination of shame and determination. But how on earth is she to grab old Keeble round the throat when she is on her way down to Market Blandings to meet a friend whose identity I had better not reveal at this point? Well, Market Blandings houses the only reputable gents' hairdresser for miles around, from which Joe Keeble was just emerging, having had his grizzled locks clipped preparatory to the county ball.
Mr. Keeble?
Miss Halliday, I beg your pardon, I was thinking.
Can you spare me a moment or two, Mr. Keeble? I want to talk to you about Phyllis.
Phyllis?
Your stepdaughter.
Do you know her?
She was my best friend at school. I had tea with her just before I came to the castle.
Extraordinary.
Of course, if you say it's none of my business...
My dear...
Well, it is my business, because she's my friend. Mr. Keeble, Phyllis told me that she had written to you about buying that farm. Why won't you help her?
Oh, I want to help her. I would do anything in the world to help her.
Then why don't you?
I'm curiously situated.
Yes? Phyllis told me something about that. But, Mr. Keeble, surely if you can manage to give Freddie Threepwood £2,000...
He told you.
Yes, just now.
Gosh, you haven't told anyone.
Of course not.
You wouldn't tell anyone.
Why should I?
Of course, it isn't really stealing.
What?
I shall buy my wife another necklace.
You will what?
So that everything will be all right. Constance will be perfectly
Constance?
Happy. Don't you know?
No, what?
Nothing. Forget what I was saying. I must be going.
Mr. Keeble... I don't know what you mean, but you were just going to say something which sounded... Mr. Keeble, do trust me. I'm Phyllis's best friend, and if you've thought of a way of helping her, I wish you would tell me. I might be able to help.
Well...
I think it's about time we summed up where we've got to. There are now four people after Lady Constance's necklace... Eve, who is acting for Joe Keeble. Smith, who is acting for Freddie, who is acting for Joe Keeble. And the well-known firm of Peavy and Coots, who are acting for themselves.
Where have you been all this darn time? Gosh dang it, you leave me a couple of days back saying you're going to make this bozo that calls himself McTodd get you into the house. And that's the last I see of you. What's the big idea?
It's all right, Liz. He did get me into the house. I'm his valet. That's why I couldn't get at you before.
Well, this is good, Ed. It couldn't have worked out better. I've got a scheme all worked out, and now you're here, we can get busy.
A scheme?
A pippin.
Spill it, Liz.
Well, to begin with, now that the house is packed full of gadzoonies who've come up for the county ball, her Nibs is wearing that necklace every night.
Where does she keep it, Liz? Have you found that out?
No, I haven't, and I don't want to. I've got no time to waste monkeying about with safes. I believe in getting things easy. Tonight... This bimbo that calls himself McTodd is going to give a reading of his poems in the big drawing room. You know where that is?
Well, I can find out.
And you better had find out. And before tonight at that. Because I'm going to sit behind Lady Constance while that goof is shouting his fool head off. And I'm going to reach out and grab that necklace off her, see?
But Liz, if you start any strong-arm work in front of everybody like the way you say, won't they...
No, they won't. Because when I do, it's going to be good and dark in that room. And it's going to be dark because you'll be somewhere out of the back of the house, wherever they keep the main electric light works, turning the switch as hard as you can go, see? I guess I can trust you not to bungle that.
Liz, you can trust me to do just that little thing. But
all
what
right.
are we going to...
I know what you're going to say. How do I get away with this stuff?
Yeah.
Well, the window'll be open, and I'll just get to it and fling the necklace out, see? And while everybody's cutting up and what the helling, you'll pick up your dogs, run round as quick as you can, and pinch the thing. Well, what do you think of it?
Liz, you're the oyster's eye tooth.
Across the pale parabola of joy. Ah, Miss Halliday. A pleasant night.
Yes.
The stars, bright, twinkling, and, if I may say so, rather neatly arranged. That wiggly thing up there is King Charles Wayne.
Yes?
Yeah, indeed. I assure you. I hear you went into Market Blandings this afternoon.
Yes.
Are you coming in to hear me read?
No.
You show your usual sterling good sense.
Shall I tell you why I went to Market Blandings this afternoon?
Do.
I went to meet Cynthia.
Oh, Cynthia.
Your wife.
Yes.
Directly after we had that talk on the lake, I wrote to Cynthia, telling her to come at once and meet me in Market Blandings at the Emsworth Arms.
Good beer.
What?
I said they sell good beer.
Never mind about the beer. I thought that if I could see her and have a talk with her, that you might become reconciled.
Oh, that was like you. That was an act worthy of your great heart. But I fear that the rift between Cynthia and myself...
I saw Cynthia, and she told me that her husband was in Paris.
How in the world did she get an idea like that?
The only excuse I can find for you is that you're mad. When I think of all you said to me about poor Cynthia on the lake that afternoon, when I think of all the sympathy I wasted on you...
Oh, not wasted. It made me love you, if possible, even more. Womanly intuition will have told you long ere this that I love you with a fervour with my poor vocabulary I cannot hope to express. True as you are about to say, we have known each other but a short time, as time is measured, but what of that?
After what has happened, I suppose I ought not to be surprised at finding you capable of anything. But are you really choosing this moment to propose to me?
To employ a favourite word of your own, yes.
And you expect me to take you seriously?
Assuredly not. I wish simply to go on record as an aspirant to your hand. Gradually, however, as the days go by and we are constantly together...
You surely aren't dreaming of staying on here now.
Well, most decidedly. Why not?
But what is to prevent me telling everyone that you are not McTodd?
Your sweet, generous nature. Your angelic forbearance. Considering that I came here as McTodd to be near you, I hardly think you will be able to bring yourself to get me slung out.
You are mad.
I have loved you since the moment when I saw you sheltering from the rain under that awning in Dover Street. I do not press for an answer
now. I should hope not.
I merely say, think it over. Reflect that I'm an acquired taste. You probably didn't like olives the first time you tasted them. Now you probably do. Give me the same chance you would an olive. All you have against me is the fact that I'm not Ralston McTodd. Well, think how comparatively few people are Ralston McTodd. Let your meditations proceed along these lines. I am not Ralston McTodd.
Everybody is waiting, Mr. McTodd.
Of course. Of course. I was forgetting. I'll get to work at once. You're quite sure you do not wish to hear a scuttle full of modern poetry, Miss Halliday?
Quite sure.
Well. Come, Comrade Baxter, let us be up and doing. I mustn't disappoint my public.
Well, I've been proposed to a fair number of times, but I've never had one like that before.
Across the pale parabola of joy, an urchin Pierrot treads his wheel, hurling a hyacinth scream of pain, where cobbled
well, at least
shatter.
Life would never be dull.
Probing and,
he's certainly different.
Where the star's anguish batters...
And anyone who can recite drivel like that with such sublime confidence can't be all bad.
...their sharp essence on the screens of life. Sheltered staccatos shimmer through a sleeping palace in a window...
Ladies
and gentlemen, I think the lights have gone out.
What's going on? Diamond necklace. What shall I do? hide it. The flower pot.
Curious, don't you think, the way the flower pots keep coming into the story? And don't think you've heard the last of them yet, not by any means. However, at this point in the plot, I had a problem. I've always thought of my characters in terms of actors in a play. If a well-known actor finds that all he's got is a short scene in Act One, he'll walk out. And that seemed to me just the case with Baxter. He had to have a good scene somewhere that would correspond to the latter part of Act Two. I decided to bring in one of those scenes of nocturnal confusion without which no stay at Blandings is ever complete. Baxter lies restlessly in bed. Susan, the chambermaid, she was a detective after all, has searched for the missing necklace without success. Baxter's alert brain melts the mists of sleep like snow in a furnace. I say, that's not bad, don't you think?
It's not in the girls' room or the valet's, which can only mean that it's hidden somewhere around the house. Like one of those stupid games they used to make me play when I was a child. What's that?
Now, it is part of the Blandings tradition that no one prowls about in the middle of the night without colliding with something and knocking it over. In this case, Eve, creeping out in search of her precious flower pot, brought down a small table containing a vase, a jar of potpourri, an Indian sandalwood box of curious workmanship, and a cabinet-sized photograph of the Earl of Emsworth's eldest son, Lord Bosham.
Someone's prowling about downstairs. This will have to be investigated.
It is also a well-attested part of the Blandings tradition that no one attempts to steal down the great staircase in the dark without...
No!
In this particular case, the cause of his downfall was a golf ball, left at the top of the stairs by Freddy Threepwood, who had been practicing putting in the corridor before retiring to bed.
The door's open. There's someone out there on the terrace. That's where they've hidden the necklace.
I should have pointed out that Baxter was wearing lemon-coloured pyjamas, a circumstance which made it all too easy for Eve to follow his movements as he began to explore the terrace and to race back to safety with her flower pot. With great presence of mind, she shut and bolted the door.
They've locked me out!
Dratted bird! I can't very well ring the bell. Not with all those bright young things assembled for the county ball. What ribald humour would they make out of my present costume? But there's no other way in. The castle was built to keep out invaders. And now it's keeping out me! Calm. Keep calm. Take advantage of the situation. Work out where they could have hidden the necklace. In the bushes. Too risky. In the hole of a tree? No. I know. They've hidden it in a...
Wait for it.
Flower pot. A whole row of them. If I wanted to hide a necklace where I could be sure of finding it again, that's exactly where I'd put it.
If there are any of you who are excessively sensitive about geraniums, I suggest you go and make yourselves a cup of tea. For Baxter is going to empty out every pot without giving so much as a single thought to the tender plants he is casting about the terrace.
Nothing! Nothing! Damn! Damn! Damn!
Damn McTodd, or whatever his name is. Damn his valet. Damn the Halliday woman!
Oh.
I've got to get back inside. No one will be out for hours. Must be some way I can wake them up. A pebble. That should do it. Not a whisper. I'll have to try something bigger.
I told you that we weren't through with flower pots, not by a long chalk. To me and to Baxter and to the whole Waking Dawn chorus around him, there seemed to be only one way to rouse the sleeping household. Say it with flower pots.
What's that? What? Must have been dreaming. Oh, flower pot. Oh, flower pot. I don't recollect bringing it to bed with me. Hot water bottle, yes. Flower pot. Why should I have done that? There's another. What can it mean? Who can be throwing? Why should I... Baxter. It must be Baxter. He was pitching flower pots at Mac Todd only the other day. It is Baxter. Those frightful pajamas. Yeah, Mac Todd. Mac Todd.
What is it?
Well, my dear fellow.
Oh, come in. Come in. Will you take a seat?
No, I'm extremely sorry to be obliged to wake you, my dear fellow, but the fact is my secretary Baxter's gone off his head.
Oh, much?
Yeah, he's out in the garden, in his pyjamas, throwing flower pots through my window.
Flower pots?
Yes, I was hoping that you might consent to go down, possibly having armed yourself with a good stout stick and induce him to desist and return to his bed. Huh?
A sound suggestion in which I can find no flaw. I will see what can be done.
Lethargy had been creeping remorselessly over the efficient Baxter. Sleep, which he had been denying to himself for so long, could be denied no more.
Awake, awake, beloved, for morning in the bowl of night has flung the stone that puts the stars to flight.
Oh, you've been long enough. You!
And lo, the hunter of the east has caught the sultan's turret in a noose of light. You will find the sultan himself speculating idly on your motives for bunging flower pots at him. Why, if I may venture the question, did you?
Baxter? My dear fellow?
I can explain everything, Lord Emsworth.
What?
I can explain everything.
It turns out to be very simple. He was practicing for the Jerking the Geranium event at the next Olympic Games.
Baxter, my dear fellow, your face is dirty.
I was digging. I was digging.
What?
Digging!
Digging? What were you digging for?
I thought Lady Constance's necklace was in one of the flower pots.
What?
I can't stand any more of it!
What did he say?
He said he thought that Lady Constance's necklace was in one of the flower pots.
Baxter thought my sister's necklace was in a flower pot?
So I understood him to say.
Why should my sister keep her necklace in a flower pot?
Ah, there you take me into deep waters.
The man's stark staring mad. I thought so before, now I'm convinced of it. I must get rid of him. Yes, I must get rid of him. Well, my dear fellow, I suppose we'd better be getting back to bed. Seeing if we can't get a little sleep, huh?